scuba equipment at the ready, because it's time to be seduced by the three most charismatic men in all of England. So here's to you, dear listener, on another episode of That Song From That Movie. This is something new. Casper Slide Part 2.
Featuring the Platinum Band.
And this time, it's gonna get funky.
Thank you for joining That Song From That Movie, the journey through the very best and worst of movie songs. I am your pretty half-baked host, Dietrich, and we're joined by the man who Jesus loves more than you will know, Alex.
And more than I'm willing to express in this podcast.
I thought I'd go back to giving you the nice ones.
Thanks, Dee.
It's only because we're also joined by a socially awkward and very off-putting man called Ben. Ben.
Yeah, I really empathise with this film.
I thought you might.
It speaks directly to me. Little did you know, I was once a graduate too.
I mean, that will shock many people who are listening.
Oh, great, cheers.
So what have we been watching this week?
I watched It's a Wonderful Life.
In January?
In January, yes. In January. It's a, you can watch it in the summer.
Wink.
It's just that annoyance of nothing new is coming out. Keep seeing trailers for things and like, oh, that'll be good. And then nothing materialises.
I did want to actually ask you, Ben, about the trailer for the new Studio Ghibli film and your thoughts.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
I haven't.
I haven't even heard about it.
I thought Studio Ghibli was closed.
No, so they've done a new trailer for a film, but it's CGI, and there's been a lot of people complaining about it.
I've read about this. I haven't seen the trailer for it, though.
Oh, you haven't seen the trailer? Yeah, have a look on it. It's on YouTube, I think.
I don't like that.
It looks odd, but I kind of like, I wasn't as against it as many people seem to. What's the film called? I can't remember what it's called. I know it's another Diane Wynne Jones book, like Howl's Moving Castle, but I can't remember what it's called. The CGI is in the same style as the normal animation, so it looks really odd.
Oh, wait, it's not that Earwig and the Witch thing, is it?
Yes, that's it. That's it.
Is that. Okay, I have seen the trailer for that then. Quite a while ago. I don't like it. I don't want things to ruin my things. Stop ruining my things, people.
Damn you, technology. I didn't think it looked too bad. I thought it looked quite weird and unusual.
I hate change. Yeah. I also hate quadrilogies.
Can't go an episode that I mentioned Toy Story 4. Or referencing it anyway.
What about you, Alex?
What did we watch? We watched a film this morning which was called The Greatest Store in the World. Oh, The Greatest Story in the... What was it called? The Greatest Store in the World, I think it was called.
had a long-lasting impact on your life, clearly.
I was trying to think what it's going to be, because I'm getting it confused with The Greatest Story Ever Told, which I think it is a play on that, because it is a Christmas film. Also watching it in January.
Store or story?
So it is store.
Like Mop a Top Shop.
Like, it's S-T-O-R-E. And it was a film from, like, 1999, I think. But it's like a Christmas film about this family who are homeless who live in a mall or a, whatever you want to call it, shopping centre. It was very, very late 90s, early noughts. But it was quite good. Very Christmassy. Very warm.
Good for January.
Definitely.
we're letting out many industry secrets here.
You mean the podcast isn't live?
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah, true.
Well, I have watched the second Pirates of the Caribbean movie this week, and I'm now at the tipping point where it starts to go towards crap.
Starts?
the third one is okay, but it's already on that downward slope towards whatever Salazar's revenge is.
Fight the Kraken.
What was the second one? The Dead Man's Chest?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So today's episode is Mrs. Robinson from the movie The Graduate. So to find out what was happening in the world when the movie came out, over to you, Alex.
Yes, so boy, Christmas really went quickly, didn't it, guys? It almost feels as though it hasn't actually happened yet. But don't worry, because I'm going to take you back there now. In fact, I'm not just going to take you back to 2020 Christmas, but the Christmas of 1967.
Personal favourite of mine.
I remember it well.
It's actually the year after the Christmas that we've already spoken about in the Grinch episode. And do you guys remember what the best-selling toy was of that year?
I do. It was Twister.
Can you have a guess at what the best-selling toy was of 1967? Also board game-themed, but you wouldn't classify it as a board game. And unlike Twister, this did actually have a film adaptation in 2012.
Battleships.
Battleships,
yeah.
What a film.
Have you actually seen it?
I have, yeah. I mean, who was sitting around that writing table?
They were probably playing Battleship, Sean, I think.
Yeah, they probably were, yeah. Wait, guys. I've got an idea.
Also, in December 1967, full-time colour television programming began in the UK on BBC Two, which had inaugurated the service with a test broadcast from Wimbledon on July. But in December, it showed its entire evening lineup in colour, starting at 6:30 in the evening with Billy Smart's Circus.
TV hasn't changed.
We're still all cozying up by the fire to watch Billy Smart's Circus in 2021.
Nice catch.
So BBC Two was in colour, but BBC One was not in colour.
Exactly, and this is what we're coming to in a second. So despite this, when the Beatles' Magical Mystery Tour first aired on BBC One later in the month, it was in black and white, which upset the band because the psychedelic elements were lost.
I mean, when you've got something as controversial and as scary as colour being introduced to the wider public, it might induce a peasant's revolt. So you've got to be careful with these things when you introduce magic into the realms.
I like that they started with Wimbledon.
Lots of green.
One
easy.
Colour. That, green. No, but that's bad though, isn't it? Because the one colour you don't really want to start with is green because it really glares.
Wasn't it? Didn't all colour TVs just burn into the screen? Like when you turned it off, you could still see the image. If you watch that, you know that girl, that like standby thing. It was like that girl with the puppet.
Oh yeah, with the clown.
Yeah, I think if you left too long, you could like wake up in like a nightmarish fever dream and just stare at your screen, and she's there. Just
I'm pretty sure you're just thinking of multiple episodes of the TV show Life on Mars, because that is exactly what happens.
Oh really? I have not seen that.
Unless that was based on this concept, but that does happen in Life on Mars. Yeah. Anyway, further news. So Otis Redding recorded Sitting on the Dock of the Bay on the 7th of December, 3 days before his accidental death on the 10th of December at the age of 26, when his plane crashed into Lake Monona in Wisconsin. But that's it, really. That's the news. And obviously also the film The Graduate came out.
We're being very efficient today.
Trying to keep up a pace.
On the ball.
Bit of a cold.
Because we're into a new era of that song from that movie in 2021.
2021 is all about efficiency. Directed by Mike Nichols, written by Buck Henry and Calder Willingham, and based on Charles Webb's 1963 novel of the same name, The Graduate tells the story of Benjamin Braddock, played by Dustin Hoffman, a recent college grad who has become disillusioned with his future after a lot of not doing very much, such as standing at the bottom of his parents' pool in full scuba gear. The story takes a turn when Ben is seduced by the older Mrs. Robinson and then subsequently starts a relationship with her daughter Elaine. Now, have we seen this film? And if so, what did we think?
So yes, I have seen this movie. I watched it yesterday.
Oh, good lad. What was it on?
Question mark.
Moving on.
Very legal places.
Yes, all the legal streaming services. Yeah.
My opinion is split in half for this film. I thought the first, let's say first half, even though it's probably more like first two-fifths, was this sort of fun, awkward movie about a guy in over his head trying to deal with like an older woman coming onto him. But I thought the second half, where it was dealing more with his relationship with Elaine, was this sort of creepy stalker movie that, obviously, I know it came out before it, but it had massive American Psycho vibes to it. So, yeah, that's where I am with it. What about you, Ben?
Can't say I've ever compared it to American Psycho. It's been a long time since I've seen this film. I think I watched it when I was maybe at the coming to the end of university, so 20, 21. And found elements to empathise with, and I would quickly add that none of that relates to an older woman. I still hold it in memory in high regard. I think it's it's famous because it is one of the, I think, best coming-of-age films. I think still has a lot of relevance to today in that delirium from leaving university or college of, like, what am I going to do with my life? And not really understanding what the future holds, and maybe just trying to distract myself with temporary entertainment. I think for people who haven't seen it, who are thinking of watching it, I think you could still get a lot out of it, and it hasn't dated. Obviously, there's elements of it, but I think it still would hold up if I watched it.
Mm. It's interesting, both of your comments there from the two of you, because they kind of do touch on what a lot of people think of it. So, like with Dee, with what you said about it being like a film of two halves, a lot of the reviews at the time felt similar. Like the beginning of the film felt like it was going to be this really new, fresh take on sort of this coming-of-age story, and that it had something really special in the latter half let down. So there was a lot of reviews of that at the time. And similarly, Ben, with what you were saying about it still holding weight now, or that it hasn't aged much, it's interesting that because... So I think in 1997, it was 7th on the AFI Greatest American Movies list.
What?
Yeah, in 2007, it dropped to 17th, so it dropped 10 places. And there's this sort of more contemporary view of it where, again, they're going back to this thing that the opening half is really strong and then it loses its way in the second half.
I can see that.
I kind of get it. But that sort, for me, is what makes the ending so strong, because
yes,
it kind of, which I think is what I'd like, I mean, the beginning and the ending are the two parts of the film that I think are really, really iconic, but we'll maybe go into those a bit later. You have that sort of like really joyful euphoria of triumphing over like the cruel rules of the world at the end when he breaks up the wedding, spoiler alerts, although it's too late. But then that moment, it just like lingers just that little bit too long on the bus and you sort of get that famous what now moment, and it just really echoes the beginning. So you have this sort of journey to come to the same outcome that you started with. And I think it does really encapsulate kind of a lot how a lot of people felt when they leave college or university and they don't know what to do. And so he sort of finds a purpose, but then loses it instantly again at the end. Actually, I think it's just a really powerful ending, but I do take your point, Dee, about that sort of second half where he's like, it is a bit creepy. And I think a lot of people were commenting on that in the reviews that I read as well, that it does sort of become a bit stalkerish the way he sort of just keeps showing up. And the fact that she is the daughter of the woman that he had been having an affair with.
Yeah, just constantly going, get a blood test. Come on, get a blood test. For me, get a blood test. Which I had to Google why he was asking that.
Go on.
Apparently until the 1980s in America, you had to prove you didn't have syphilis to get a marriage license.
Oh, God, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Does it make that clear in the film? Or is it just that he keeps asking that question?
Well, I think it doesn't make it clear in the film in the sense that I think it was just common.
Yeah, I have no idea about that.
Do you think, though, like, I mean, you said it's gone down 10 places.
Yeah, still 17th in 2007.
Still 17, yeah.
Mental.
Do you think that's just, I always want, and I guess it's one of those films, and I think this in general with coming-of-age films, as I get older, does my interpretation resonance sort of fade? Because I'm kind of not at that stage of life where I can kind of empathise with the character.
Yeah.
He's a bit slimy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a bit of a brat as well. I mean,
he's a bit of a prat. And I think maybe you kind of maybe think more about Mrs. Robinson's character.
Yeah.
Because I think she's a more interesting character.
I think actually, too, quote one of Dee's favourite all-time critics, Roger Ebert, he said the same thing. When you watch it when you're younger, you relate more to Benjamin. Obviously, as you should, because that's the point of the film, I suppose. But when you watch it when you're older, you're sort of a bit more on her side. So it is an odd dynamic, I suppose. I mean, what I would say about Benjamin as a character, though, is that, like, the parts where his eyes worst, like where he takes Elaine to that strip club, for instance, think about halfway through the film, it's because he's trying to fit into this world. This is the way he believes it's supposed to be, or is what he's been told it's supposed to be. So that kind of excuses a bit of his behaviour, maybe.
It's not me, it's my environment.
No, but I mean, in terms of like him being a bit of a dick, I think like the whole point is that he's trying to be a dick because that's what he thinks that's what he thinks the world is, maybe.
I didn't read it that way.
Did you know?
No, I read it that he didn't care about Elaine until he couldn't have her.
That's interesting.
When she ran off and started crying, that's when he actually wanted Elaine. That's how I read it.
Yeah, which I think is possibly a fair interpretation.
Being seduced by Mrs. Robinson and things like that, are those sort of cheap thrills that you're getting when you're still trying to figure out adulthood? Are these things you associate with adulthood when you're younger, like the cool things, like, oh yeah, I get to drink, or I get to do all these things, go to strip clubs, but then the consequences of those things, and that they're not as fun and enjoyable as you might have thought when you kind of, you know, wished about them when you were 16, 18, and like the consequences of being with Mrs. Robinson, strip clubs aren't that interesting. It's that side. But at the same side, once he jumps at the thought of adulthood, getting married, you know, running away, and then that settling in those last few seconds when they're kind of just like, oh shit, what now?
Yeah.
Is that, yeah, now we are, we've got to embrace adulthood, it doesn't matter. It's the same thing, you know, it's kind of like, oh, this is a great idea, what a declaration of love, you know, let's get married. And it's like, was that a stupid decision? Probably.
I think that sort of goes back to what I was saying, that at that point, he's got her again, so now he doesn't want her.
It's like JD in Scrubs.
Yeah, it is exactly like JD in Scrubs, actually.
Should we talk about the song? Anyway, actually, no, before we do that, I could just touch on the casting, because it's quite interesting with the casting of this film, because so many people applied for the roles. It's just like, it's literally like a who's who of like really famous actresses, especially for Mrs. Robinson's role from this period. So Sophia Loren, Judy Garland, Rita Hayworth, Susan Hayward, Deborah Kerr, Jean Simmons, Ann Baxter, Shelley Winters, Angela Lansbury.
That'd have been a different film.
Yeah. But even like for the other roles, so like Elaine, like Faye Dunaway was considered, Shirley MacLaine, Raquel Welch. interesting that, like, Dustin Hoffman, this was, like, his first role, and actually, he only got paid just $4,000 after taxes for this role.
Wow.
And a lot of people, there was a lot of not particularly pleasant reviews at the time of his performance. But I think they just sort of said they went with him because he came and he was really awkward and that fit the role. Because they sort of considered Robert Redford, but I think, and Warren Beatty, actually. But Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway both turned down the roles
because
they were both in Bonnie and Clyde for like the same year, I think. But Robert Redford would not have been right in this role. It would have been, way too slick and cool.
Yeah, he has never struck out.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't have been believable at all, would it? Let's just put it that way. But yeah, let's talk about the song. So the song that we're going to discuss first, and that's the hint, so what's to come, is Mrs. Robinson. So written, recorded by Pop Punk
band. That is a genre folk that I am willing to explore.
Pop folk duo Simon and Garfunkel. Before we get into the details of how the song came about, do you have any initial opinions about the song, its use in the film, maybe?
I knew the song well before I've seen the movie. Because to me, that song is just associated with American Pie and the Finch and Stifler's mum scenes. But it almost felt like the movie kept teasing like motifs of the song until it finally cracked on with it.
Mm.
And when it finally arrived, and it was in the second half,
yeah,
at that point I was sort of going, God's sake, with it. So, how was you, Ben?
You cynical bugger. It's hard for me to recall when it appeared in the film. Like I say, it's over almost 10 years since I've seen it.
I mean, do you want me to just give you a
please, yes, please.
The part, correct me if I'm wrong, because I've not seen it for a year or so. The part where it actually kicks in is when he's driving around trying to find Elaine. And he essentially confronts Mrs. Robinson, and that is where he finds out that she's getting married to somebody else. And he's sort of just driving around, just looking for her in his Alfa Romeo Spider. And that's it, really. that's it. It's like, this is part of what I will touch on later. But yeah, that's where it appears in the film.
Can I ask a question? If either of you two are more familiar with the work of Simon and Garfunkel, are they, or were they rather, counterculture? Because like, I remember watching the film Almost Famous, and the mum's going through the kids' record collection and there's Simon and Garfunkel track and she's like saying music of the devil or whatnot. But when I think back, you know, when I listen to them, it couldn't be more soft often. It's very sort of pleasing rock. I know they had some sort of songs where the meaning might be around like drugs and things like that.
So early Simon and Garfunkel, you probably would consider it because of the time that it was. So you're talking mid-60s.
Yes.
It's kind of not like the let's all sit around the old wooden radio and listen with our ears cupped. They sort of became quite big by doing tours of university campuses and things like that. And they were quite underground at this point. I think they'd have a bit of success with the first two albums, but this is what kind of really exploded them into fame. And I think like what you're of thinking of, Ben, is maybe like the Bridge Over Troubled Water album, which is the last one, which was like, I think, one of the highest selling albums of all time, just period.
Yes.
And it is a bit more pop, whereas this is, the earlier albums are a bit more folksy. Definitely. And there's a lot of covers of like classic folk songs, and there's one of which is in this film, which is obviously Scarborough Fair.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was more counterculture, which I think is why it fits more, and probably did fit more at the time. I suppose maybe in retrospect, it doesn't necessarily look like it.
Yeah.
Do you want some facts about the song?
Oh, please.
It's creation. So director Mike Nichols spoke to Columbia Records about including Simon and Garfunkel's songs in the film after binging on their music over a two-week period. And they actually used a couple of the songs as placeholders, and Sound of Silence for one, which is the song we will talk about later. I've mentioned it now. They used that as a placeholder in those two scenes. So contacted them, and Paul Simon wasn't initially convinced by the project, stating that doing a movie was akin to selling out.
Yeah, I mean, that's counterculture.
Yeah. But I mean, it's embarrassing considering his performance in Annie Hall. But let's not go into that again.
I didn't even know he was in Annie Hall.
Yeah, it's an embarrassing performance. But he did eventually agree to write a couple of songs after meeting Nichols, who impressed him with his wit. That was a quote. Impressed him with his wit. So after several weeks, Simon pitched a couple of songs, two of which, So Punky's Dilemma and Overs, would eventually feature on the album Bookends, which was the album that features the official version of Mrs. Robinson that came out. But Nichols rejected both songs, he didn't like them. And they said they'd been working on a song, possibly originally entitled Mrs. Roosevelt, although there are a lot of contrasting versions of the story. It's kind of like a John Barry situation where like there's like 10 different versions of the story of how this song came about. But what is clear that they played the song in progress using D's and do's, etc. And Nichols loved it, exclaiming something like, "It's Mrs. Robinson now." And there's several different versions of who actually was the one who said it's called Mrs. Robinson. That's the one that I found the most believable.
That's really interesting.
So do you guys want to hear some facts?
Sounds like it's like some sort of back alley thing. you want any facts?
You can't see, but I'm holding open a trench coat. So this was a Billboard Hot 100 number one single, but it wasn't until 1968 when they released the single version. Yeah, so this is another thing I should mention. They didn't actually release the soundtrack to this film until the year afterwards. But actually, what I didn't mention about the film, which is interesting based on what we discussed, although I know we're getting back to the film, but it actually, adjusted for inflation, is the 23rd highest grossing movie in North America of all time.
That's incredible.
Which you just wouldn't think, would you?
No.
No.
I think it was the number one of the year. I mean, presumably it must be with that number. Oh, it was certainly up there. But at the time, so the budget at the time was $3 million. It made $104.9 million. But I think it said, with inflation, that saw like $800+ million.
Wow.
So it was very successful at the time, which maybe you wouldn't necessarily think watching it now. But that kind of explains as well why the song is so well known and why the soundtrack did so well. Because the versions on the soundtrack, as I've said, are not the version of this song, especially Mrs. Robinson, that you would recognise. In fact, there's two versions on the soundtrack, one of which is just instrumental and one of which is the very brief lyrical version that's in the film. But yes, some more facts. So it's technically the first, and you'll enjoy this, Steve, because it involves the Grammys, is the first rock song to win the Grammy Award for Record of the Year. Whether you want to call this a rock song or not, I don't know.
Well, the Grammys always do this. You'll have songs, I don't know. Going back to this star, probably Casper Slide Part 2, it probably won like Best Original Rock Song.
It's difficult to really know if that means anything, but that's what it says. It says in the notes that I've written here. So it could completely be made up by me. Yeah, I think it also won like Best Duo Song from a Film or something.
Oh God, I hate the Grammys.
It also finished number 6 on AFI's 100 Years 100 Songs list in 2004.
Great. Big fan of those lists.
So it's obviously well associated with this film, which is what I wanted to talk about next, and I've touched on it a few times. So Dee, you only watched this film yesterday.
Correct.
Would you have picked this song as the song that people would remember from the film?
No. And as referenced before we started recording, I had to ask you what song we were actually doing today, because I thought it was The Sound of Silence.
Exactly. And this is what I wanted to touch on, because there's two, I would say, two really iconic moments in this film. There's the very beginning and there's the very end. And there's a lot of stuff that happens in the middle, but those are the two bits that really stuck with me when I watched it the first time. And in both those instances, the song that's playing is The Sound of Silence. And I think that it's this film that put that song into such prominence that it is today. And I think if you ask many people to name a Simon and Garfunkel, that's probably the one that they would sing.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of cinema and iconic movie scenes, this song just stands out way above the other one. And yet, when you search like online, like the song for The Graduate or movie songs, lists of movie songs, and you look through articles and articles, the one that always gets listed and quite highly often is Mrs. Robinson. And it's not even really in the film. The proper song that people know is not in the film or anything to do with the film, because it came much later. And the version in the film isn't anything other than a very brief musical interlude that doesn't have much, you know, it doesn't hold any weight within the film. Ben couldn't even remember the scene that it was in.
Nope. Yep. And I can remember the one with Sound of Silence.
Exactly. I haven't even said what happens in the opening scene, but I'm sure you can remember it.
Yes.
Because, like, they're both cinematically quite stunning, I think, both those two scenes, and you can say what you want about the rest of the film. But I think that those two really hit the correct note of the message that the film is trying to put across. And really, the first scene especially, I think, just, like, sets up the story so well that I just don't understand why it's Mrs. Robinson that everyone always references, but maybe that's a rant over and done with. I don't know what you guys think.
Well, I assume it's because of the lyric, and that's it. That's literally it.
Yeah, it has to be, doesn't it?
Because the quote, Mrs. Robinson, are you trying to seduce me? I think a lot of people know that. Mrs. Robinson, you know, the song, I think it's basically just a tying of those things.
Yeah, and what's so funny about that is the song, it wasn't even called Mrs. Robinson to begin with. That was literally no relevance to the film. And in fact, so this is interesting. You would think that the song being called Mrs. Robinson, the character Mrs. Robinson, that the song was written for the film and so would be eligible for a nomination for an original song at the Academy Awards, but it wasn't.
What?
Yeah, so it wasn't eligible because it wasn't written exclusively for the film. which is just the biggest irony when we're talking about what we've just been talking about there. Even though, like, from the story I told you, it sounded like the song was written for the film, it wasn't, because if you remember, they came to him and said, oh, we've got this that we're messing around with. It's called Mrs. Roosevelt.
Who won the Oscar that year, then?
Have we been to 1967 before on the podcast?
Okay, so in 67, it was Talk to the Animals by Leslie Bricusse from Dr. Dolittle.
Talk to the Animals.
Yeah, Mrs. Robinson's a better song than that.
Yeah, but it wasn't.
I mean, I'd also like to add The Bare Necessities was also on that year, which should have won.
Yeah.
I think that that just further proves the point about the song Mrs. Robinson and why it shouldn't be the song that people associate with this film.
Going back to what I referenced on the podcast before, that opening sequence, I very much enjoyed it because I love opening credit sequences where it's just names, not much going on, but you learn so much about the character in that sort of 2.5 minutes when it's basically just him stood on that travelator conveyor belt thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just so well put together, that opening scene. And it surprises me that it was a placeholder, that the song was a placeholder and they didn't write it around it, or they didn't have it specifically in mind to begin with.
It's actually something about the film. Generally, I thought it was really well directed. There was loads of like interesting shots that you wouldn't expect for a 60s film.
Yeah.
Well, like, obviously, the leg shot. And there's like the one where he's going up the staircase and the camera's sort of just moving with them up the different levels.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, how would they have done that in the 60s without stupid rigs? It would have been like a guy on a rope, probably.
Well, you'd be glad to know, dude, that it did win Best Director at the Academy Awards and wasn't nominated for Best Original Song. So,
Heads up.
Mike Nichols is a great director.
Yeah, and I think that that's maybe why the film, one of the reasons why the film is held in such high regard, because of the direction of it. And it's a very interesting film to look at. And there, like you say, there's interesting shot choices all the time.
Yeah, and I imagine the use of a pop group, whatever you want to call them. I mean, 67, I'd say that's still quite early for that sort of connection. I'm just kind of looking through the winners of the Best Original Song at the Oscars in years before, and it's all the same names, you know, these composers, repeatedly. And yeah, I think it does really stand out. And like, I find it weird that this was Dustin Hoffman's one of his earlier films, because he was actually a lot older than his character, wasn't he?
He was 30, yeah. He was...
mad.
I know, yeah. But I think, I don't think it was just one of his earlier films, I think it was his first film. I think this is his first one.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
Anne Bancroft wasn't actually that much older than him, was she?
No, which is part of the reason why she was chosen over some of the actresses that are listed, because he didn't want her to be too old. But obviously, in terms of the character, she was 35, so she was 5 years older than Dustin Hoffman. She was like 50, so what, 15 years older than what he should be, or 14 or whatever. But yeah, actually, in terms of the actors, it's not that much of an age difference.
Dustin Hoffman must have had a pretty meteoric rise then from like 30. Well, in the early, he got Midnight Cowboy there, but like, yeah. You know.
And he was also in Kramer versus Kramer, which was a big mass film.
Yeah, Meet the Fockers.
I think he's been three Best Picture winners. Rain Man was another one.
All the President's Men.
What was it, Marathon Man?
That's Marathon Man, yeah. And Tootsie.
And Tootsie, yeah.
In a different, it should be in a different league, really. a different kind of film. So, top five. Now, I always find the American graduation weird. It's something that's completely alien to us Brits. There's so much sort of celebration and ceremonial stuff, not just in the award, but like just things going on around it. Especially high school. I'm still amazed by like the high school football. They've got like thousands of people going to watch them. How many people watched you playing football, Alex, at high school?
Probably like three.
Including your father.
And then the subs.
Yeah, I think college football gets like higher attendances than like NFL and stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
That is ridiculous. And so there's all this sort of weird around graduation, but I scoured the internet for what are the top five graduation films. Now, this includes both college, as in American university graduation, and high school graduation films. So what films immediately jump to mind when you think of graduation?
High School Musical 3.
Now, that was only on one list. And I can't even shame the website because I've moved straight past it. I will also shout out in the same vein, the Lizzie McGuire movie was on a list. Maybe I was on the Disney Channel website.
Oh, dear.
Do I have to say American Pie?
You know what? I never saw American Pie on one list.
That's crazy.
Yep.
Mean Girls?
Mean Girls was on... And the Lizzie McGuire... The Lizzie McGuire movie, whatever the website was, it was the first. It was the first film. Maybe it was...
HilaryDuff.com.
Maybe it was HilaryDuff.com. No, none of these films so far.
Something like Superbad, maybe? Was that
Superbad was the fifth most used film on these lists.
I can't think, the one that came out recently that I really liked, I've forgotten the name of it.
Booksmart.
Booksmart. Was Booksmart?
Booksmart was sixth. Sixth.
No, sixth. Are they kind of like, are they all pretty much like sort of teen movies?
The Graduate is on the list.
That's The Graduate is on the list, but he's like, there is no graduation in that.
No, but I guess it's called The Graduate. Maybe people just assume that, not even having seen it. The most used film was I don't even see it as a graduation, but it involves Grease. Quite a funny scene in which it involves a graduation video when she's going from university to a different type of school.
I was thinking, is it Legally Blonde? But
it is Legally Blonde.
Well, because I remember the scene at the end is a bit like a graduation, isn't it? But that's when she's graduating law school.
She also does graduate like at the start, because she's then choosing what to go to law school, because she uses that graduation video when she's in the swimming pool.
Yeah,
which is all a kind of the reason why she gets into the school.
Was Grease not on there?
Grease was on some lists, but not on most.
So how many have we actually got so far?
Well, we've got three.
Yeah, so you've got Legally Blonde, you've got The Graduate, you've got Superbad. Two more.
The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
You're not good at this, Dietrich.
I'm literally just trying to think of graduation scenes.
One was quite a well-loved film from about 2 years ago on a lot of lists.
Lady Bird.
Lady Bird, yes, there you go.
I don't remember a specific graduation scene, though, in Lady Bird.
Yeah, well, I think, well, she graduates at the end, doesn't she? It's like the last year. The other one, I'll give you a clue. I keep getting older, but they say the same age.
Days and confused.
Other notable mentions include Perks of Being a Wallflower, The Social Network, which I wouldn't consider a graduation film, St. Elmo's Fire, Kicking and Screaming, which is a great film, and Into the Wild, but not the Lizzie McGuire movie. There was such a huge blurb about it as well.
Well, you were on LizzieMcGuire.com.
Yeah, true. I was on HilaryDuff.com.
So now it's time for the ultimate question of movie or song. Confusingly, it's actually going to be Mrs. Robinson versus The Graduate. Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, if we're discussing Mrs. Robinson, which we agreed we would be, then I would choose film, definitely. I don't think the song adds anything. I do like the song, but the version of the song I like is the version that everybody knows, which is not the version in the film. There is a fundamental difference between the two, and one of them is a complete full song and one of them isn't. And I just think, like, the scenes where it features, it adds nothing. Well, it doesn't add nothing. Like, I think it fits well in terms of, like, mapping his sort of running around the city and, you know, keeping that tempo up and stuff like that. But it doesn't have the same impact that Sound of Silence has. I think if that was the question between Sound of Silence and The Graduate, it maybe would be a bit different. But then again, it's because of its association with the film that I like it so much. So I think I will say film.
Yeah, it's interesting that, because I think Sound of Silence has been used in quite a lot of other films as well, which, I think it is a much superior song. If it is this weird pseudo Mrs. Robinson, then yeah, I can't remember that. I ain't got a clue what that is. And I remember the film and remember it fondly. And even if it was the original Mrs. Robinson, I'll still take the film. It's one of the iconic coming-of-age films.
Because I wasn't exactly impressed by the whole film, and this song comes in the second half of the film, the bit I don't like, I don't really know what to pick, to be honest. It's a good job you two came to a decision.
Unanimous decision.
Not really unanimous, but I still get a vote.
Unanimous decision.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, so that brings an end to another episode of That Song from That Movie. Let us know what you think of The Graduate and which song you think is actually the song from The Graduate. You can do that on Twitter. What is our Twitter handle, Ben?
TSFTMpod.
Yeah, get in touch, like and retweet everything. So you can help out the podcast by sharing this on Reddit. What subreddit should they pick this week, Alex?
Hilary Duff's subreddit. Go give some love to that Lizzie McGuire movie.
I'm just going to see if there's an actual...
Oh, there will be. 100% there will be.
Hilary Duff. There is a Hilary Duff subreddit.
Get on it.
It has 1.9K members. Two are online, one is me.
So you can help out the podcast by buying our fantastic merchandise, t-shirts and face masks and what other things you would need in life, notebooks, they're on there as well. You can get a Christmas jumper, it's probably too late, but you can get it in time for next year. That's tpublic.com/TSFTM. And the other way you can help is it's on Patreon, and we have news on the Patreon front. We have a new Patreon subscriber, so everybody say hello to Jade Cameron.
Hello, Jade.
Hello, Jade.
Thank you for subscribing. If you want to join Jade as one of our Patreon subscribers, it starts from as little as £1 a month or $1.50, depending on where you are in the world. And that's at patreon.com/TSFTM. So all that's left now is to do some goodbyes. So it's goodbye from myself, goodbye, and goodbye from Alex.
One word. Plastics.
Curse you, Alex Walker.
Was that your quote? Surely not.
And goodbye from Ben.
Bring me Peter Pan.
10 minutes to Wapner.
So goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye. Goodbye. It's the iconic line of the film.
I know it is. It's in the list of 100 quotes as well.
Oh, is it? Plastics.